Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. I'm Jim Allen, and sitting in for John Gibson, who is in the United States having a great time, is Jason Koskrie of the Japan Times. How's it going, buddy?
It's going well. How are you doing?
Oh, okay. Busy week in baseball, and I think we're both getting ready for the Rugby World Cup, so our cups runneth over. Yeah, the excitement there is palpable. So anyway, we've got John is in the States and he's going to be back next week. But Jason was very kind to sit in for him this week, which is always fun. I always enjoy the change of pace. And so John went out and he chatted with Alex Ramirez, the manager of the DeNA Bay Stars. And we have a lot of news. We have another no-hitter. I do not know what's going on. We've got a big retirement and more. So here we go.
Clearing the bases.
All right. Thanks, Jim and Jason. And Jason, thanks again for sitting in for me. So I went to Yokohama Stadium on September 4th. I sat in on the pregame media scrum with DeNA skipper Alex Ramirez, the one he does just about every day, probably every day. And this was the day Eno, the right-hander, started against the Tigers. And the Bay Stars fell behind early in that game. And eventually in the 10th inning, ended up walking it off. Yoshitomo Tsutsugo with a home run, a two-run shot in the 10th inning. So that was a fun game. As I mentioned in the chat, the Bay Stars had played better against some of the top teams. So I asked Remy Khan about those things. And Ramirez uses some Japanese terms. So for those of you who might not know, choshii means in good form or playing well. Choshi warui means the opposite, in poor form or playing poorly. And he uses that in the talk. And then once again, as I always do, I've spliced out the Japanese interpretations, so it's only the English portions. And in fact, I think at times Rami Khan's interpreter is a little bit difficult to hear, but the context of his response or Alex's responses put those questions into perspective, so I don't think you'll have any trouble understanding. Also, Alex said he forgot to make the lineup that day, so he made it out on the spot in front of the media, but I cut that part out since the game is now outdated. So anyway, here's Rami Khan, and then after that, take it away, guys. Thanks a lot.
Who's going to be lead off today? Nobody wants to be lead off? If we don't have any questions, I can go watch batting practice.
You know, I always got questions. So. I'll go. Since we last spoke, I told you about the fact that you had a poor record against some of the top teams in the Central League. But since then, you've improved that. What happened?
That is baseball. You know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. That's part of the game, you know. I mean, you know, we go out there every single day, try to win, and, you know, I mean, things are changing now, so we're playing better, you know.
Well, also, it feels like there's a lot of pressure in these games in September. I'm not sure if that's something we feel as the media or you guys feel on the field, but how do you approach those games when you go in each day?
Oh, of course, there is a lot of pressure. I mean, a lot more than, you know, back in April or even May. You know, some players, you know, will feel the pressure, you can tell. Not only players, but also, you know, myself and, you know, coaches. That's normal, you know. It's just how we prepare ourselves, that's the key, you know. That's the preparation, it's the number one thing that we have to make sure we do and prepare ourselves very good. And then, you know, we don't feel as nervous, you know, during the game.
But you've had to turn to some younger players because of injuries and other reasons. So how do you get those younger players to feel at ease?
Well, you know, of course, unfortunately, you know, we had to go that route. Some of the players got hurt. We had to call up some young players, gave them the opportunity, and, you know, they did pretty good. They took advantage of the opportunity. And then, you know, that's one of the reasons why we are where we are right now. I mean, these guys really stood up and, you know, they stepped to the plate. You know, but if you look at the team right now, we only have like one or two rookie guys in there. You know, most of the guys are veteran players now. The thing about rookie players and veteran players is the veteran players they're more stable. You know, they if they're Choshi, they stay Choshi for a long time. But young players, if they're Choshi, it's just for a little bit of time, you know, a couple games. and then they get Chochi Warui again, and then, you know, you kind of get stuck with them sometimes at some point because they don't know how to, you know, get back onto the game, you know. But, you know, veteran guys, they always, you know, they're more stable, you know. So especially around this time, it's a totally different kind of pressure, you know. So
one of the reasons that you
basically, that's one of the reasons, yes. I mean, you know, Ito did a tremendous job here the first couple games, and then after that, he's kind of slowed down. Once the opposite team start, you know, figuring him out, it was a little bit hard for him. So, you know, bringing Kuramoto was, you know, a better opportunity, you know, so more stable. So that's the reason. There is two ways when you have a team, you know, to maintain the team. There is a time to develop players, and there is a time to win, go for the win. You know, if you try to develop three or four players at the same time, it's kind of, they have to be superstar. Everybody have to be superstar. Other than that, the team is not going to win as many games. But if you go with, you know, try to win, go with veteran guys, you will have a better chance to, you know, to stay consistent and win more games.
Well, Tsutsugo was Niban for like one day,
yes.
And then many days, and then now he go back to the Yoban again. Yes. Did he have to change, or did he change the practice or anything? Like,
no, he's still the same. I mean, you know, he doesn't have to change anything. You know, I think that a Tsutsugo like that, I mean, he's going to be able to produce. You know, no need to change anything. I mean, we still got, 17, 18 games left. I mean, you know, still on pace to hit 30, 35 home runs, you know, this year. Maybe, you know, 80 to 90 RBIs, which is, you know, very good, so.
Well, you mentioned about, like, veteran players, even in Hiroshima, mm-hmm. a couple of days ago. And then, like, you know, Ino is one of the veteran guys. Then what do you expect from him today?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm expecting him to go. I mean, of course, I would like for him to pitch, you know, probably 6 innings. Maybe 6 innings would be very good. But, you know, inning by inning, that's the most important thing. And I mean, Ino is a veteran guy, and he knows what to do. But we also know what kind of pitcher he is, you know. So we cannot close our, you know, our eyes with him. You know, he can be pitching good 4 innings, and then the 5th inning, he gets in trouble. You know, so, you know, we got to keep it inning by inning. You know, hopefully he can pitch 6 innings. Yeah.
Oh, Ito.
Just
then, even big game. Then, do you know any latest news that when he's coming back in?
Well, he hasn't catching the game yet. So once he catching the game, and then we can consider. Yeah. Lineup today is gonna be. Let me think. Who is gonna be Hichima? Do you remember? Yeah, I totally forgot. I had so many things in mind and many meetings that I forgot I made the lineup.
Thank you, Mr. Ramirez. It was good to hear from you. I have to do that someday. Have you been out there much? Have you seen Ramichan much this year?
I've seen him more in the second half than I did in the first half. They've got a very nice new press box out there that I really enjoy more than I did the first, a lot more than I did the first one, and more than I did the second one, because there's actually room in the press box now. So we'll see how that is come climax series time. But yeah, so I've been out there a few times just during the second half of the season, a lot more than I had been.
Well, my routine is usually I'm out of the ballpark long before the game starts, so I haven't yet to see the much publicized Yokohama Stadium press box. But
that's great. There's an elevator now. You don't have to walk up the entire stadium.
I knew you were going to say that. The entire stadium.
I have fond memories of Yokohama. You know, when it wasn't a fond memory, but I spent the night in Yokohama Stadium.
I was going to say.
After you got out, you were gone. And then a couple of innings later is when it happened. And then the other press box, yeah, climbing up all those stairs. It's like climbing Fuji or something.
Hashtag.
They don't give you a stick, though.
Yeah.
So any comments you'd like to make about what Alex had to say?
Rami always, he loves preparation. Rami loves preparation more than any other foreign player I can, that I've been around. You've been around way more than I have, but he is always talked about, and he was a player, how much he prepared, how much video he watched on not the pitchers, but the catchers and everything else and the umpires. And so it's not a big surprise to hear Rami preach preparation. Although, you know, at this time of the year, you know, when the games count the same as they do in August or in May and April, it's just, you can see the finish line clear now, and you can do the math in your head easier about what you got to do. And you know, guys get tight sometimes. And in that situation, you know, preparation can only take you so far. You got to have guys who have been through it, or otherwise they'll, you know, maybe try to do too much, or try to be outside of themselves. And that's when you get a lot of mistakes happen. And that's the kind of thing that, I harken back, maybe it was Aaron Guile, but it was one of the Swallows who used to tell me that they always did not so great at Tokyo Dome against the Giants early in the season, because all the young guys just had wide eyes going in there because of, you know, all the media pumping up Tokyo Dome and the Giants so much. So, but you know, those guys have got to go through it, and having veteran players who have been through it, or having veteran players who can keep themselves under control, would be good for them. So I think preparation is good. So it's not really surprising to hear Rami say the things that he said.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting how he put it in that context, is that they know more about what they need to do.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, I think that is very relevant. Of course, what stuck out for me is his basically saying, this is what it is, you know, his, and I think it's the Alex Ramirez player experience talking. Now, I think when you hear him say young players don't stay consistent, they have older veteran players, when they go into it, they have a little funk, they can get back. They know what to do to get back. And I don't know that that's true, really, that younger players are less consistent. It might be true, but I think certainly one aspect of that is probably true, is that with less experienced players, they, when a new player comes into the league or faces people he hasn't seen, basically they have to adjust to him if he's successful. And then when they make the adjustment, okay, now he's got to go back and find out, you know, and change what he was doing, how, you know, how they responded to him, and make an adjustment to that. And that's something that many of them haven't done before. You know, some guy's been a regular for 3-4 years. He's, you know, he's used to this. Okay, now they went outside again, or they started with a curveball with me this time, or they stopped throwing the fastball in the first inning or whatever. So they have an idea, okay, what might be coming next. But if you don't have that reservoir of experience, I think it is harder. I think what he said about it, harder to make the adjustments, I think that may well be true. Of course, I don't know it's true. But I think also that, yeah, the veteran guys will be, I think your point is probably well taken, that they know what's coming. And he said, you know, they can prepare better. But I think the other thing is that they're more reliable. You have a bet. The manager, from a manager's standpoint, you know, he has a better idea of what these guys can do, in good and bad. Or the young guys, you're still going through small sample sizes.
Well, so, I would say that's kind of not just the manager. I think that would be maybe the player himself, because I believe that. If a veteran is going through a slump, I think a younger player might have the tendency to overcorrect based on what's happening to him. Where I think a veteran player knows his game better, knows his swing better, probably knows the opposition better too. And I think he can make better decisions on what needs to be corrected, and not correct it too far and throw himself out of whack. And I think a younger player just may not have the experience to do that.
You're saying that, I think there's another dimension. There's a lot of layers to this, and that is, if you're a younger player and you're less established, if your career is less established, and you realize people are looking at what you do to base their decisions, evaluations on you, that you don't, there are things you want to stay away from. Typically, you want to avoid striking out. In Japan, that's kind of a big no-no. And so sometimes you make adjustments that are not good for your, that you think are good, going to keep you in the game, keep you, give you more playing time, when in fact they're basically defensive mechanisms. It's common. It happens all the time. Players begin to freak out about things. And as you said, putting extra pressure on themselves. And I think that's a part of that. Interesting. Yeah, I think that's good. I think that was it too. I think, yeah, I think you hit the preparation bit straight on. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the DNA BayStars then. And what's your impression of them right now at this stage of the pennant race?
Well, at this stage in the pennant race, well, they got Kuwahara back today and he got 3 hits. So, you know, that's...
Today being Saturday, we're recording... Sorry. That's all right. No, we're recording on Saturday, just to let the listeners know.
They got Kuwahara back on Saturday, and he got 3 hits. And he, I guess, separate of what I particularly think of Kuwahara, although I do think he's a good player, Ramirez really, really likes him. He really puts a lot of responsibility on Kuwahara for getting the rest of the team going. Like he wants Kuwahara to be, you know, the Yokohama version of Daichi Suzuki, kind of like a spark plug player who can just rally everybody around him. And he puts that pressure on Kuwahara. And so maybe having him back is going to be help the team's confidence, or maybe help Rami's confidence. I'm not sure how that's going to work, but you know, it could be good for them. But Tyra had Kintaro Tyra, the pitcher, had a good run. Falling way back down to earth, and Hamaguchi's been sort of up and down. Hamaguchi's been sort of up and down. So their pitchers, I think, right now is what may be costing them the pennant, because I'm not sure if they're going to catch Yomi Yuri. I don't think they're going to catch Yomi Yuri. And their starters don't have really a particularly great ERA. So I mean, they're giving up runs and having to catch up, and catching up is hard, and then catching up and trying to then beat a team. So I think they're actually in a kind of precarious position. You never know where the carp are gonna do. Mm-hmm. They've been so up and down themselves. But I think holding on to second is gonna be, you know, a tough one them too. Although I think they can do it. I don't know if they will do it. So they're caught in the middle right now, just trying to catch Yomi Yuri, but also make sure they at least finish second. So that's a lot of pressure on this team.
Yeah, I think the BayStars have been a really, I think, to be honest, and I won't say anything I haven't said before, that I think they're playing way over their heads. I think, having said that, I think they have a good team. And when I say a good team and playing over their heads, I mean that they have a good balance of players that allows for them to sustain that kind of smoke and mirrors thing for a long time. Mm-hmm. If you're an unbalanced team, this is me just talking out, you know, blowing hot air a little bit, but if it would seem that if you're an unbalanced team, say like the Cebu Lions, and you've got, you know, big gaping holes, and or the Yakult Swallows, and you've got big gaping holes, and you're playing above your head, it would seem that house of cards is a lot easier to fall, as opposed to a team like the BayStars, which seems very comfortable playing at that level, playing at, you know, with the pieces they have. They seem to be able to play within themselves and not trying to do too much. And they seem to thrive on that. They're not going to blow people away, but they're good enough to surprise you, as opposed to good enough to, or I should say bad enough to fail all the time. This meant not making any sense. But I think Alex Ramirez, let me put it another way, I think Alex Ramirez does a good job with keeping the team loose. You know, I think they're not worried that if they're playing over their head, or maybe they think whatever it is, I think he keeps the team focused and loose. He did that as a player, and I suspect he does that as a manager. And I know he tries to instill trust in all the players, and he doesn't always succeed, but he tries. And he gets good performances out of a lot of players. I think Kuwahara is an interesting case. I like the way you described that. I think Kuwahara, of course, had that really kind of a miserable year in 2017, but came time at the Japan series, he wasn't extra special, but he was much more useful than he was in the season. He was actually a useful base stealer as opposed to a guy who was getting thrown out 2 out of 3 times.
Well, that's the thing about Yokohama also, that they don't sacrifice a ton. I think they might be dead last in stealing bases. So it's hard to see, you know, where is this team going to score runs when they need to score runs and Tsutsugo isn't hitting or Soto isn't knocking them out of the park or those guys are way down the order. Like, how are they going to manufacture runs? To be fair, they are the best team in Japan best team in the Central League at hitting and with runners in scoring position. But getting those guys there is a tour for them a lot. And they leave quite a few guys on base, too.
I'd really noticed that, but could be. I look at their defense is middle of the road. Their pitching is middle of the road. And one of the, as I've said before earlier this year, that their weakness probably more than the powers there in it is they're the worst team. They're the worst Central League team at getting on base. And that's really their Achilles heel. But having said that, I think they have good leaders. I think they have a good, they've got an Achilles heel. Okay. Deal with it. I don't think they're as good. I don't think, to be honest, all the pieces of the Bay Stars, I don't think they're as good. I don't think they're a second place team. I don't even really think they're a fourth place team. But, you know, all that matters is how many games they win. Nobody cares, you know, how good the talent is. So, I mean, if you look at the Pacific League, SoftBank's is just a hair better than Oryx at getting on base. I mean, they're way in the back of the Pacific League, but they do other things well. So, okay. Now let's talk a little bit about the Central League pennant race. Is it, I guess the big question is it over?
I want to say it is over because I just don't think either one of those teams is going to catch Yomiuri. And I think those teams both had a chance to catch the Giants when the Giants were absolutely just flailing. And then when the Giants would lose, the Carp and the Bay Stars would lose. And it just kept going like that. So
we had Tatsunori Hara had a bit of a meltdown today after his team blew. Basically, they scored the tying run in the eighth inning against the Carp, and it was 5-5. And then they loaded the bases in that inning with one out. And Alex Guerrero and Takumi Oshiro both popped up to end the inning. And then Oshiro committed a passed ball that allowed the Carp to score the go-ahead run in the 10th inning. And basically, Hara came out and said, as you can see from today's game, there are people who are clutch players and people who aren't. Whoa.
Well, there's been a lot of frustrations for that team there's been bits of the season where you could kind of see Hara in the dugout with that grin on his face. Like he's just, I can't believe I came out of retirement for this. Stuff like that. So they've had their moments, and I think they're just the best team this year. And so they've had all these moments and they've been able to get away with them. But yeah, there have been plenty of times where he's had that. It just probably was too much for him today.
Yeah, but I mean, having said that, they've in a sense, they're sort of the opposite of the Bay Stars. They've got all the pieces.
Yeah.
Essentially. They've got all the pieces. Okay, their bullpen, I'm sorry, Scott, but the bullpen overall, the whole picture of the bullpen has not been a good one. I mean, the starting pitching isn't what people expected, but yeah, that's basically because Sugano hasn't been what everybody expected. Basically, the bullpen is a weakness, but you know, if that's your weakness, take it, because the offense is good, the defense is pretty good. The offense, I shouldn't say, is good. The offense is very good. It's a really good team. They should be. I don't think they're playing as well as they should, but who cares? I mean, they're
the most complete team, which is why I think they're gonna find a way to hold on. I like, but the bullpen, I do agree there, because I know Hara has been fond of bringing in Kota Nakagawa to get these four out saves, and he makes some of these games interesting, and he loses some of them too. He's a guy I would be watching, or what they're going to do with him in the postseason.
Yeah, because he was really, really good in May and June. I think it was May and June in that, you know, that first third of the season. And once, you know, once they put him in the closer role, he was really good for a stretch of 5-6 weeks. And then I don't know what happened. He came and he went, and in the second half, maybe it's his role is unsettled or what. I certainly think that right now the only person who has a role in that bullpen is Ruby De La Rosa. Everybody else is kind of, let's see what Hara, now he's, I guess he knows who his second baseman is. He's got who's in my bullpen now.
So. Well, Nakagawa seems to be his guy to bring in when it's really late in the game and somebody's in just absolute trouble. There's a fire. He's bringing in Nakagawa to put out fires and then close the game out if it's in the eighth. And he just, sometimes he just doesn't seem to have the constitution to do it. And sometimes he does. He's just been kind of shaky. And they've slid Kaguya into that, you know, we'll pitch you when we need you kind of role. They've given him a little bit more responsibility lately. But I don't know what they were expecting when they got Kaguya, but he came over and he wasn't good. Then he kind of got himself under control. Now he's sort of leveled out now. And after that, and their bullpen, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they manage these close games.
I mean, it is interesting. I mean, he's got all these people who I can't really tell them apart, to be honest. I look at them and I'm going, oh, who is this guy? Wasn't he a starter?
Oh, and there's also Kazuto Taguchi. Yeah, he has not been that great in the bullpen. He's really not been that great since he had his breakout season, I think, about 2 years ago.
Well, his second, he had two good seasons, and then since then it's been meh. So, and Kyosuke Takagi has been pretty good, and Scott Matheson has not been his usual self, which is easy to understand why. In fact, they used Ryan Cook, who was going to be their closer. They used him as the starter the other day, although I'm certain that was a bullpen. I'm not certain that was a bullpen day, but it became a bullpen day. So, okay, well, in honor of Yudai Ono's two-seamer, we're going to make a two-seam transition to Yudai Ono and his no-hitter, the second no-hitter we've had in Japan in 8 days.
Wow.
I know. Well, we only went a year and a month. We went about 14 months without one since Shun Yamaguchi threw one last year for the Giants. And it was a very unspectacular no-hitter. He didn't strike out a zillion guys. He was not overpowering. He was just good enough. They didn't get good swings against him. The most interesting quote was, "I just assumed they were going to get a hit off me. I figured they're going to get a hit off me sooner or later." And he pitched that way through the fifth inning. So he wasn't worried about a no-hitter. And then after five, he started thinking, okay, maybe there's a no-hitter coming. And then in the sixth inning, there was a play. And this was really the play of the no-hitter, was Yota Kyoda got a grounder, the shortstop, and he threw wide to first base. Okay, Dayan Viciedo had to come off the bag and try to make a tag because it was on the home plate side of the bag. And he swiped at the runner, and he missed.
It's Ryutaro Umeno, wasn't it?
It was Ryutaro Umeno, the Hanshin Tigers catcher, moves very well. And he missed, and there was a replay. Actually, he was called out, I think, on I don't remember if he was called out on the play or not, but there was a replay. No, he was called safe on the play because Yoda asked for the replay. And then Yudai Ono said that while they were replaying the play on the screen, that he was thinking, okay, there's the hit. Okay, that's the hit. And now I can just go back to pitching. And I don't have to worry about not giving up a hit. I just go back to normal. And except it was ruled an error. And so he had to go back into no-hitter mode, which he did. And the other thing, and the thing that's interesting to me about that is that it was an error because Kyoto got rid of the ball so quickly. If he had, here's the thing, and this is, of course, the thing about hits and errors. If he had hesitated the slightest bit, it's a hit. But because he didn't hesitate, and the throw was wide, everybody could see that the ball, there was time to make the play.
Right.
And that the ball got there before the runner did. If it's on the bag, because it beats the runner by two steps. But if he hesitates a second or he juggles the ball for an instant, it's not an error, it's a hit, because nobody can see that he's going to be safe. Or nobody can see that there's a chance for him to be out. So because Kyoto did a really good job of getting rid of the ball, he saved the no-hitter by getting rid of the ball really quickly and throwing it wide to first base.
Well, he also saved it because when Ono went back into normal pitching mode and then back into no-hit mode, he didn't just about gave up a hit, and Kyoto had to save it then to get out of the sixth inning.
Right. Yep. And then, so it was, and the ninth inning lacked all the drama that Kodai Senga's had 8 days earlier, when Senga walked the first two batters to open the ninth inning and had to, you know, and he had the tying runs at the plate. It was a 2-0 game, and he had the tying runs on base. So this was just a 1-2-3 bang bang play. And of course the final out was a line drive to third base that could have easily been a hit. The batter, Koji Chikamoto, said, "Well, I didn't really hit the ball well." Like what?
He looked like a rocket.
He hit it like a rocket. He fired it like it was coming out of a Saturday Night Special. And here he's going, you know, but people say things, you know, that's the category of the blooper that wins the game is a line drive. And the line drive that ends the game without a hit is a failure.
Right.
I suppose. Okay, let's make another transition to the Pacific League and just really briefly talk about the Pacific League pennant race, where we have the SoftBank Hawks were about 2 winning percentage points ahead of the Cebu Lions for 2 days. What do you see there?
I see an overexuberance to hand out magic numbers because it doesn't really make any difference at this point in the race when there's so many games left.
Okay, I'll buy that.
I think this is right now. It's more about the Lions than the Hawks. Not necessarily saying the Lions are going to win, but I think this recent little stretch is more about the Lions than the Hawks because, I mean, those guys have been. They've been doing some pretty good work on the mound recently for them. I mean, they haven't been giving up just tons and tons of runs, and they haven't been blowing tons and tons of games. And I was looking at their stuff, and I mean, I think in their last 14 games or so, they've only given up more than 3 runs, 4 out of 10 games or something like that, or 4 out of 14 games. So they've been, you know, keeping teams down. And if you can't score against Cebu, they're going to beat you because they're going to score more than 3 runs more times than not. So I think if they're getting halfway decent pitching, which they are right now, especially with Zach Neal and Wataru Matsumoto, they are going to be really hard to beat. And they've been really hard to beat. So
yeah, their starting pitching has gone through a stretch where it has been very effective. And essentially, if their starting pitching is good, they can live with everything else. That being said, I'm still mortified by all the relievers who come out, all the closers who come out in games with a big lead, the closers who come in to the ninth inning with a 3-run lead, you know, day after day, 3-run lead. And then as this is what happened with Tatsushi Masuda, I'm not saying he was exhausted pitching 3 days, you know, three times in 5 days, but he didn't need to pitch the one game he pitched against SoftBank because they were leading 3 runs. They could have brought somebody else in until somebody got on base. He didn't need to pitch yesterday on Friday when the Lions had a 5-run lead and they loaded the bases. Okay? I mean, okay, what? Bring him in with one out, needing one out. Okay, find somebody else to get one out. This guy is a valuable property. Okay. I'm just saying that because they use these guys like... I don't know what it is, but it's like if they don't bring in the closer with a 4-run lead, it's like they're not taking the game seriously.
But do you remember years ago, Akinobu Okada was pitching Kyuji Fujikawa left and right, and he pitched him in the game once, and they asked him why. He said, "Oh, I thought he could get a save or something." And they were up by 4 runs, and he was just running Fujikawa out there day after day after day after day.
Yeah, I asked when I talked to Fujikawa last month, he said, yeah, I remember that. And it was basically they were doing that so he could set the single season save record.
Right.
He still had it. He had a really hot run in August and he was on fire. And I think he pitched in 10. I think they had, it might have been September when they had some days off. And I think he may have pitched in nine or 10 straight games. With a couple of days off in between when the team was off. And it was really crazy. But he said, you know, this is what Japanese teams do. I kind of understand it. It was, in retrospect, it was pretty funny. But that's just how he is. So, yeah, it's one of my favorite stories. Not the least because... The reason the save rule got changed. But if you want to read about that, read it on jballisland.com. Okay, so we've got the Lions. I like that. The Lions basically, if they're pitching, I guess the answer to the question is keep an eye on the Lions starting pitching and see how it holds up.
Right. Although the Hawks have the Hawks get to play Oryx about, what, 5 or 6 times down the stretch.
That should be the magic number. How many games you have left against Oryx?
Well, and they got Oryx and Nippon Ham, both two teams they've just really been beaten up on. And the Lions have a weird little stretch where they've got 4 straight games against Rockton in 4 days. And I think at least one of them in MetLife, and then they go for the 2 in Sendai. I think it's 4 in a row, 4 in 4 days. So. Mm. I don't know how fatigue's going to work for them when they have to do that. Although I don't know if the Lions have a series that's 3 or 4 games long. But that's something to look at with the uneven ending to the seasons that we always have here.
Right. And the other thing is that since the Lions and Hawks don't play each other again during the regular season, if either team falls behind more than a couple of games, they're out.
Or we could go down to when Oryx was good before and they almost won the pennant and they ended up percentage points behind at the end of the season.
Right.
Which the magic number makes sense when you get down to about 4 or 5 games left because then it's really, really matters.
Sure. All right, let's make another 4-seam transition and talk about the Hanshin Tigers. Now, we had some big news this week. On Friday, it became known... very uncertainly that Randy Messenger had told the Hanshin Tigers that he was going to retire this year. And the strange thing about it was that the Daily Sports and the Tokyo Sports both had stories on the internet, which I saw. And the news agencies, I think all of them, were preparing their stories for the next day. And then in the meantime, so I knew that this was news. I saw my organization's story, but all I can think of is that the Hanshin Tigers told everybody, get those stories off the internet, because they started getting pulled. And our story, the Kyoto News story, was not scheduled to be released until 6 a.m. So I'm guessing that the Hanshin Tigers told everybody to cool it. But Randy Messenger, who has 98 wins in his career in Japan, which is the fifth most by a foreign registered player, he's playing now in his, what is it, the 10th season? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. He's playing now in his 10th season, and he's had a tough year. He's had a shoulder issues that sent him back to America, and he just returned with the farm team, and he pitched against the Tokushima Indigo Sox of the Shikoku Island League on Thursday, and he gave up 4 runs in 5 innings. He gave up all 4 runs in the last inning. I think he walked 5 batters, and afterwards he told the team, the general manager, Mr. Tanimoto, that something to Tanimoto told the media something to the effect that he said his performance was not worthy of the Hanshin Tigers uniform, and that he was done. At least he was going, the word is he's going to retire at the end of the season. So what do you have any takes on that?
It's a very frustrating end for Messenger if this is the end. Judging by the team has announced it themselves now on their mm-hmm. website, it wasn't just him speaking out of frustration or anything. It seems like this is probably where he's going to go. But yeah, it's just frustrating. And I know he wanted to get to those records. He wanted to get to 100 wins. I know that stuff meant a lot to him. And I know Gene Baki, who mm-hmm. was the old Hanshin Tigers foreign pitcher, who was the first foreign Sawamura Award winner, mm-hmm. he had been in contact with Messenger for the last couple of years. They talk on the internet and things like that. And he had told him, you know, go out there and, you know, beat my record. Go out there and get that 100 win and go past 100 wins, beat, you know, past all of us. So, yeah, I know that was important to Randy. He said he wanted to get that in a Tigers uniform. So for him to hang it up, I'm sure it's a frustrating end for him.
Of course, ideally, what would happen is this is just a minor hiccup. I mean, that he would be able to make some adjustments and be able to pitch a few more games and give him that chance to at least get to 100 wins in Japan.
Yeah.
That would be the coolest thing, because right now we've got of the five pitchers, we have the two Taiwan Kakus, Kuo, who pitched for the Chunichi Dragons, and Taiyuan, who pitched for the Cebu Lions, who are contemporaries in the 80s and 90s. And they, Kaku Genji, who actually his name is Kaku Genji because he's a Japanese citizen now, he won 117 games, so that one's out of reach. And Kuo Taiwan, who pitched for the Lions, had 106, so that's probably also out of reach. But the two Americans, Joe Stanka and Gene Baki, both had 100. And I really would like to see, because I really would like to see Randy Messenger get to 100. You know, I hope that's the case. But, you know, if he doesn't, 98's a hell of a record.
Or if they give him a retirement game and he manages to win it, then he'll be on 99. Then I wonder what would happen.
I think he knows. I imagine if he's ready to retire, he knows the writing is on the wall physically.
Yeah, that's what it must be, because like knowing Mess, I'm pretty sure like this, you know, after a rough outing on the farm. His last couple outings on the farm have been kind of not so great. I think mm-hmm. the last one might have been all right before this most recent one. So I'm pretty sure he does feel it. That I'm pretty sure it's his body, and he feels like he won't be able to do it for another year, the grind, another season.
Mm. I mean, he's been it's an amazing accomplishment when you think that he was the Hanshin Tigers opening day starter for 6 seasons.
Yeah.
and the last five in a row. I mean, how often? I know part of it is a response to the larger rosters, but since 2000, I don't have the date offhand, but since for the last 15 years, teams have had the option of going for a pitcher, mm-hmm. And they've had a lot of pitchers, and most of these guys aren't winning anywhere near 50 games. Chris Johnson this season won his 50th game in Japan, and that's a huge accomplishment. But 98, that's amazing.
For a foreign pitcher, but for a foreign pitcher who was a reliever and had like his ERA was almost at 5 in his first season, and they brought him back and made him a starter. So I think it was 490 something, but they brought him back and made him a starter, and it clicked for him.
Well, it's remarkable because he hadn't been a starter since the low minors. I think since he was probably 21 or 22. Mm. Just amazing.
Yeah.
And the other thing I would mention is that in addition to now, I've spoken a lot in the past about him getting the Tigers getting shut out when he pitched, and I did count them. Mm-hmm. And I have Randy Messenger's in the years he's been pitching in Japan. He leads all Japanese pitchers as of right now from 2010 to 2019, with his team being failing to score a single run when he was the pitcher of record 35 times in 10 years.
Man.
Number two, although I thought he would have a bigger lead. But to go down that list a little bit, Masanori Ishikawa, the Swallows, has 32 times. Takayuki Kishi, 30. Jason Standridge, 30.
Who played for the Tigers for a while.
Played for the Tigers. Yeah, there's a bunch of Tigers on that list. Minoru Iwata, who we have talked about, is tied with Manabu Mima at 28.
Iwata.
Yes. Yuki Nishi, well, who's now with the Tigers and getting that special treatment, 27. Chihiro Kaneko, 26. Hideaki Wakui, 20.
It's a Kansai thing.
Okay, well, yeah, Hideaki Wakui isn't a Kansai guy, but Manabu Mima isn't. But largely, yeah, it's largely that. But it's a lot of guys, actually. It's a pretty common thing for your team not to score while you're on the mound. It's just that I think if I ran another one and count how many runs the team actually scored in their games, Messenger might have a little bigger of a lead. But he is fairly high on the low run support in NPB. He's not the least supported starting pitcher with 200 starts. That would I think right now that belongs to Kano Take. But he's up there. He's in the top half of that group. Okay. Now, the other thing, the other news we had about the Tigers in the last week, and I know it's their dissimilar functions, but with Randy Messenger leaving, I know his is not because he wants to leave, but the Tigers seem to be pushing the eject button an awful lot this summer. So we had Takashi Toritani, who they said, aren't you finished playing yet? What are you still doing in a Tigers uniform? Let's get you out of that thing.
You got a coach's bat right here for you.
Exactly. I mean, I don't mind if a team does like the Rakuten Eagles did with Kazuo Matsui and says, we would like you to coach for us next season. If you are ready to retire, we would like you to coach. And he said, no, I'm not ready to retire. I'm going to move on. And then he didn't really, long story short, but they said, if you want to retire, we have a coach's job. We don't have a playing job for you. Instead of saying, why don't you retire? Yeah. We'll give you a ceremony if you retire. We've heard that that's also what the Chunichi Dragon said to Daisuke Matsuzaka. We'll give you a ceremony. If you want to retire, we'll give you a ceremony. How about that?
Like, and the Giants told Yoshinobu Takahashi that he was going to be the manager.
Exactly. You know, it's like they're taking out the gold watch. I don't know if maybe new people know, but used to be in America, if you were any kind of a junior executive or something and you got to be 50 years old or retirement age, here's your gold watch, which means it means don't come to the office tomorrow. You're done. We're done with you. So, you know, that sort of awkward thing with Takahashi. And then the next news was that Masayuki Kakefu, their executive, what is his senior executive advisor, who makes up these titles? He said, I'm out. Okay. He'd been overlooking the farm team. He'd been doing a variety of player development. This is Mr. Tigers. He was right. Mr. Tigers. And he said, I'm done with this team. And then comes the next dude, which is Yangervis Solarte, which was really weird. We've talked a little bit about him. Now, I've talked about him at length, so I'll let you do the talking.
Well, at first, it's weird with Solarte, but you have guys who come over here and for whatever reason, they just can't do, not, I can't, it's the wrong word. They just won't adapt or won't figure out what it takes to play in Japan, or especially when you see a guy get sent down. Mm-hmm. That's usually when it starts. That's usually when you can really tell. Although Wayne Grazit used to say from the first time he talked to a guy, he could tell, you know, you're going to be here next year. You're not going to be here next. I mean, he wouldn't say it to their face, but he could tell, you know, he's going to be here next year. He's not going to be here next year. So, but when a guy gets sent down, especially a guy who's had early success, that's when you really, really can see, you know, I say this having not been around Solarte after he got sent down. But that's what a lot of times when you see the discontent set in when you're on the farm in Japan, especially if they've told you that you're not going to be on the farm, and they rushed him up in the beginning anyway.
But he'd been in the country about 5 days when he made his first team debut.
Right, and then I was at that game, and he had the big home run at the end and sexy time, and everyone was happy and all that, but. I would attribute some of it to that, but I don't know how innocent the Tigers are in all of this because of their history with foreign players.
Yeah, and they do have a history for
even
sure.
Even the foreign players that, you know, the fans like and love.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The history there, you wonder, you know, what did, and then you see what they did with Toritani, because fair enough, if you don't want him around, you tell him that. You don't tell him now. You wait till the end of the season. Wait till you're at least eliminated from mathematically making it to the postseason, and then say, all right, are you going to retire so we can set up a ceremony for you before the season's over?
That was their plan. They wanted some planning guy probably told the team and says, what are we going to schedule a Toritani retirement thing? We got to get started on, you know, bring in the singers and dancers or something.
Right. It's just an absolutely unnecessary distraction for the team. Although I'm sure they're used to that kind of stuff, but still.
Yeah.
So I haven't not been around Solarte a ton. Mm-hmm. I think I spoke to him a couple times, but not been around him a ton. It's hard to, I don't know exactly what went down or who to blame, but I mean, you do see this happen. You see guys go down and they lose their minds down there, and they just, everything is wrong and they can't handle it. I don't know how he went ahead and got himself released, which is a step farther than most of them go. But
yeah.
But then again, I can't totally absolve the Tigers because who knows what they were saying to him or what they were telling him and this and that. And so, it's a weird situation.
I'm not an expert, but I'm getting a sense that the T in Tigers stands for tactless.
Hashtag high heat.
Because it seems like they've just got their, you know, their mouth wide open, ready to put the foot in it. because yeah,
they're trying to get Yano. They're like, talk about, oh, what if Yano doesn't make the Climax Series this year? What about his job? Like, already.
I know. So it's a very peculiar organizational dynamic that they have with the Tigers. And this is not the first time it's happened. It happens numerous times, successful players, unsuccessful players. My whole point is that Solarte had very little chance to adapt to Japanese baseball other than a crash course on the first team and then go down to the farm team. I mean, it should be the other way around.
Right.
You would leave him on the farm team instead of playing. I think he played in one game. He practiced once with the first team. He played in one farm game or two farm games, and then he was up. I mean, you let him. I'm sure he impressed everybody with his physical skills. He's a very talented guy. He's an energetic guy. I loved his, you know, the stuff he brought to the game. But, you know, you let him feel comfortable instead of deciding this guy's ready. This guy isn't ready. I mean, they decided he was ready before they knew he was ready. Mm. And then they decided he couldn't play before they knew he couldn't play. Mm. You know, you get the feeling they really don't know what they're doing, organizationally speaking. So I'm not surprised that Kakefu left. I'm surprised more people haven't left. Now, speaking of people leaving, we're going to make a two-seam Central League transition to the Yakult Swallows, who also having a serious abandoned ship month with manager Junji Ogawa, head coach Shinya Miyamoto, who was ostensibly being groomed to be the manager and apparently got they exposed him too much to the real Yakult. Because when Ogawa said he was leaving, Miyamoto didn't waste any time sticking up his hands and saying, "Me too, I'm out of here." like, hold on, don't close that door.
Yeah.
And Shohei Tateyama, the right-handed side armor, is leaving after three Tommy John surgeries and various other surgeries, and Kazuhiro Hatakayama, the 2015 Central League RBI leader when they won the last one, the Central League. They're all leaving. And how did you read that situation over at Jingu Stadium?
As that Daisuke Araki's voodoo dolls are working. So everybody's coming out so he can finally manage the team.
I think he's seen enough too. I don't think he wants to. I haven't seen Mr. Araki around. He must be an analyst these days. But
farm guy, the pitcher Takatsu is going to manage.
Shingo Takatsu apparently is going to get, which is interesting. If Takatsu takes over, he will be the second Japanese former major leaguer to manage an NPB.
Well, Warren Cromartie wants to do it, so
yeah. I ran into Mr. Cromartie the other day. And
hard not to.
It is hard not to. I haven't been hanging around the Giants much, but I did. He said hi. It's been a long time. I said, yep. Okay.
Ogawa's. I never thought Ogawa was particularly a great manager, but mm-hmm. I do think there is a little bit of him falling on the sword here because unless he was the one that put that team together. I mean, this is a team that has basically no pitching to speak of. Like the last time they were under four as a team ERA was when they won the pennant that year. Mm-hmm. And that was also one of the last times they had they had an on-fire bullpen at that point too. But yeah, this is injuries beset this team like crazy. They have really bad pitching staff and they've got a great offense. I mean, they've got guys who hit, they've got guys who score runs, but they just can't prevent runs. And some of that is managing, but some of that is the people running the team and letting Ogawa, you know, take all the bullets. And I kind of felt that, although I thought they were going to be better this year, I felt that Ogawa was going to take the bullets until they were ready for Miyamoto to step in and save the day. And like you said, Miyamoto's getting himself out of that situation too. But, yeah, it's rough times over at Chingu.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Shingo Takatsu, the people I've spoken with were very impressed. The pitchers I've spoken to were all very impressed with him. The Swallows have had a lot of successful, very cerebral players in the last 20 years. I'm sure there are a number of guys who would jump at coaching on that team. I know Aaron Guile, who is now working with the Swallows International Department, has always expressed a desire to coach the Swallows, and I think he would be a welcome addition. Ogawa has had a lot of Ogawa has shown a knack for getting good results from foreign players. Oh. He's got he leaves them alone. He gives them a fairly long leash. You know, he's the opposite. He's the anti-Hanshin Tiger.
Yeah.
And but having said that, the teams have been hurt a lot under his reign. They have failed to develop some of the young pitchers. A lot of pitchers have gotten hurt. And again, I don't know whose fault that is. It may be an organizational thing. But with everybody quitting, it's an indication that there's an organizational issue that these guys, you know, I think if I'm Miyamoto and I saw an organization that was committed and had a plan, that I might want to stay and be part of it. Mm. No, I don't know Miyamoto well. But that would be my take. If that were me and I wanted and I had any interest in the team, I would do that. But I also know there are people who don't want to manage, period. And maybe Miyamoto, maybe they made him head coach and see if you like it.
Right.
Because I know so Taguchi with Oryx does not want to manage. He's basically, I'm sure he's had his arm twisted by Shigetoshi Hasegawa to coach with the team, and he just can't say no, but he doesn't want to manage. So that's also a possible solution. Daisuke Araki's Voodoo Dolls is another another potential explanation. Okay, now let's get to this week's questions. Okay, we have two high heat questions this week, and I'm going to make them really quick. This one is from Jojo via Twitter. The Swallows outfield today, and this was a few weeks ago against the Dragons at Nagoya Dome, is a collective 107 years old. I don't know, but I'm guessing this is the oldest in NPB. How do other teams rank? Hashtag high heat. Do you know the answer, Jason?
You know the answer.
I know the answer. Okay, I'm just in case you knew this ahead of me. Okay, I do know the answer. Yes, Yakults is the oldest in NPB. They so far through Friday's games, they had the oldest. Their lineup on September 10th was with Vladimir Ballantyne, Norichika Aoki, and Yuhei Takai. Was a combined of 108 years and 28 days old. And that's pretty darn old. That's one of the oldest we've seen in a while. The next oldest one is more than 2 years younger. That was the Hanshin Tigers on April 19th with Kosuke Fukudome, Masahiro Nakatani, and Yoshio Itoi. Now, the Swallows' youngest lineup this year is a little less than 2 years younger than the Nippon Ham Fighters' oldest lineup. Mm-hmm. And the youngest lineup in NPB this year was on April 28th. The Oryx Buffaloes played don't everybody raise your hand when you recognize these names. Kodai Sano, Hayato Nishiura, mm-hmm. Keita Nakagawa. Now Nakagawa has had a fair amount of playing time.
Yeah.
Those three were a combined 65 years and 230 days, so almost 66 years old, so an average of 22. Now the other one is that the oldest starting outfield in my database, which is basically the oldest in Japan since 2001 and then various assorted years before that, was October 22nd, 2011. It was 110 years, 110 days old. And that outfield was Alex Ramirez in left field, playing his final regular season game at Tokyo Dome as a Giant. And his name. Okay. In center field was Yoshitomo Tani. And right field was Yoshinobu Takahashi.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. That sounds about right.
Man, you can hear him creak. You can hear the creaking joints from here. And of course, as we know, Alex Ramirez had that wonderful line when he had his 2000th hit, and people were saying he was 29. He was 29 years old, or well, hold on, 36 years old or something. They were saying, he says, okay, I'll tell you, I'm not 36 years old. I might be 40. I said, okay, what, 39? He says, I might be 40, I might be 41, but I'm not 39. So that outfield might actually be somewhat older. Okay. Now, the other question we have is from Michael Westbay, and I don't quite know what to make of this other than to say Japanese sports newspapers sometimes have weird headlines. Mm. Okay, Jim and Jason. My son made the mistake of trying to read the front page of Nikon Sports a couple of days ago and wanted to know why the Cebu Lions are being called the Mountain Thieves. And I thought, what? Okay. Now, Michael continues. He had many more objections to the front page headlines and how they made no sense in Japanese. It was funny that the one who didn't know how any of the headlines are pronounced in Japanese could explain their meaning, however. Mountain Thieves is obviously the Nikon Sports press nickname, but what is the origin of that? He wants to know how they became Robin Hood. I have to ask, and I apologize, Michael, but I really have no clue. I mean, I don't see the front page of the Nikon Sports. I don't get it anymore. And I don't know, I can't picture what the kanji characters were being used.
Sanzoku.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, Sanzoku Dasen.
Sanzoku?
It's a name that started with when they were Taiheo. The Taiheo line, whatever they were.
Whoa!
When they were wearing those ugly, ugly uniforms.
The green and orange? No, the green and orange was
they were like pink.
The Taiheo Club Lions.
Yeah, they used it. I actually did a little bit of looking for that. But yeah, they do. It was from some... It was from the one of their cheer songs, one of the team songs that they used, and that was a verse in it, something about hit it like beautiful face bandits or something like that. I forget, but and so they started calling the team that, but they apparently only did it for a year, but then it pops up every now and then, like throughout Lions history. But it was kind of used for that 1975 team, and then okay. It popped up again. It's because of because of how much of a force they are at the plate. It's not necessarily they'll kill you. Not so much they'll steal anything from you because they're so destructive at the plate because they've got what? The Lions have got five guys with 20 home runs. So
they do indeed.
It's basically based off that. So it's some old nickname that Nikon has brought back for this team.
Well, that's interesting because Nikon Sports has a tie-up with the Nishinihon Shimbun.
Okay.
And those two contribute to work on the Lion stories. So the Nishinihon Shimbun's Lion stories are done basically by the Nikon Sports Reporter. I believe that is the case now. I've heard that from a friend of mine who used to be a reporter for the Nishinihon Shimbun and covered the SoftBank Hawks.
It's a nickname from when the team was down there. So
yeah, interesting, very interesting. Wow, I'm glad. How did you figure that out? How did you know that stuff?
I looked it up.
That's cheating. It's not in my database. It doesn't exist. Okay, well, that is all for this week's podcast. And I want to thank you again, Jason, for stopping in. We got to do this more often. It's always a blast.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, it's a pleasure. We'll be back again next week with John Gibson, and see you at the ballpark.
See ya.